Northern Brewer is the proud sponsor of the Brewing Network's Jameel Show. They have the widest selection of domestic and imported malts and grain, hops from all over the world, and a full line of liquid and dry yeast. No matter what style of beer you're brewing, Northern Brewer has the ingredients you need, plus fast shipping and expert staff to help you make the best beer possible. Please visit northernbrewer.com for all things homebrew. Network is proud to present Beer Radio that turns ordinary homebrew, into award-winning beer. The Jameel Show. And now, your hosts, Jameel Zainashef and John Plisse.
Hey, howdy, hey.
Hey, howdy, hey. Howdy, hey. Yeehaw.
Johnny P, fired up.
Jay-Z.
How's it going, brother?
It's spectacular.
Cool.
Feeling good.
Yeah?
A little buzz off the beer we just drank, but
I'm ready to do this. We had some really good beers from Nick. Listener.
Nick Burton.
Yeah, he brought those in from Germany. Hand-carried them, and... He wanted to thank you for the help with the wine and all that.
Nice.
And he stopped by my place. He brought like four of his beers over, and we tried those. And he had four actually really good beers.
Yeah, he's hooked.
There's a couple of things he needed to tweak on those. But other than that, I thought they were really good.
Yeah.
I was surprised, you know. A lot of times people, you know, out of four beers, usually, you know, people have some clunkers, but he had four good beers.
Like one of the three I brought today. It's all right.
No, well, you kind of surprised me. Yeah. You gave me a beer that wasn't like excellent, you know, a beer you brewed that wasn't excellent. So what am I supposed to do? I'm shocked.
It happens.
You know, it wasn't flawless. You know, what the hell's up with that?
I blame it on you.
What are you trying to do to me? You're trying to trick me with something, you know. Yeah. It probably wasn't even your beer.
Yeah. It probably wasn't.
You know?
It was Justin's.
I'm surprised. Yeah. You know, because usually whatever you give me is just like really, really good. I mean, there may need like little tweaks here or there, but, you know, or debatable tweaks here or there, but, you know. I don't know. Everybody else really liked it.
Yeah, that's okay.
Maybe it's something I had earlier. I don't know.
No. I pick up on something.
You know, sometimes you know, I shoot up before the show, and sometimes that affects my taste buds a little bit.
Interesting. And aren't you a national judge too? That's great. That's why you're doing so well.
That's right. You know, all the judges shoot up. I thought.
Nice. Well, thanks, Nick, for the beer. I mean, that's great.
Speaking of shooting up, you know, the show is brought to you by NorthernBrewer.com.
There you go. Hey, all right, NB.
I'm just saying, because, like, you know, shopping with Northern Brewers, like, you know, it's a real natural high.
Yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
Maybe I'm reaching there.
Everywhere you shop,
it's a stretch.
It's a stretch. Oh, my God.
Speaking of stretching.
Yeah. I stretched out earlier.
Yeah, we need to stretch before the show, because... It's always quite the physical event here in the studio.
I did. I went like on a 4-mile jog.
Wow! No wonder you're so fired up. You're keyed.
That endorphin high just makes you sharp.
You're tense. You're doing the Simon Cowell thing where you're trying to make your biceps look bigger.
Like that?
Yeah.
Why are you looking at my biceps?
No.
I'm just imagining things. Anyways, so since we did the last shows, both of us went to the NCHF.
Yes, we did.
That was really cool.
Barely remember it, but...
I know. It seems like it was so long ago.
It's like 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. I had a really great time.
Oh, it was a blast.
I really enjoyed it. I drove the motorhome out there.
I didn't get to see your motorhome.
Well,
Well, you didn't invite me, but that's okay.
People were like, oh, where are you parked? I told them, and they're like, oh, I'll come by, and nobody did, you know?
You know, personal little corner in the campsite.
I was right in the middle.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Damn. Smack dab in the middle, out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. But I had a really good time. Sean with his beer dinner thing. Right. That was really good.
Oh, that was delicious.
Yeah. I didn't get to try everything, but, you know, because I... I never get a time to be there on Fridays for the dinner, and I figured by the time I got out there after work, it would already be over, so I didn't sign up. So it was already sold out, and then Sean's like, oh, yeah, come on by. I'll get you in. I'll take care of you.
Yeah.
And you know, I thought about that, and I felt like, no, that's kind of like, you know, I felt bad, so I didn't want to do that. But I did want to taste the dish he made with the beer we brewed at the 21st Amendment. So I did, and it was really good.
Which dish was that again?
Like a stew.
Ooh, I remember that
yeah,
stew.
Yeah, that was really, really good.
I'll tell you what, stew up there in that climate when it's cold at night.
Oh, yeah.
That just warms you.
Yeah, I meant to savor the bowl of stew that they gave me, but I just like hammered it down. It was so good.
Yeah, it was just
first bite, and then I was just like, no, no, no,
more.
It was really, really
more,
good.
More.
Yep.
The duck was good too.
I did not try that because again, I didn't pay, I didn't want to, you know. But I came down, I sat and chatted with everybody, and you and yes. you and I. You know, I grabbed your butt.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it happens.
So maybe I had a couple to drink too.
I do workouts, so.
But yeah, it was really good. I had a great time at that, and then went to the GABF. You did not go.
I know,
which was very disappointing.
I know I could have been there to support Mr. McDowell, but
yes, Mikey, getting the long shot. His beer is going to be in the long shot six pack for 2008, and fantastic beer.
Thanks.
Yeah, good stuff, Mike. And what did I tell you? I told him back in San Francisco when he won the local thing. I said, "All right, your beer's going to be in the six pack." He said, oh well, you know. I'm like, "Come on, it's going to be." I've been telling people for.
You just did that to get me to buy drinks.
Yeah, well, probably. That's true. But no, I've been telling people for you know ever since then. I've been you know saying, "Oh, Mike's going to be in there. Mike's going to be in there." And what did I say when
Ron and I were sitting there?
Yeah, Ron was sitting there, right. And I said, "You two have won." Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we sort of went over our
afterwards. He's like, "Well, you had some inside information."
We were talking about just competitions in general. It became pretty clear that Rodney had won quite a few, and I had as well. So you figured you're going to handicap it that way.
Yeah. But exactly.
Overset of the over.
I knew that the two of you were brewing great beer and that the chances of, you know, the other people are probably brewing some good beer too, but.
Yeah. Well, who was his number one man? That was Joe Formanek. So you had you and Joe and me and him were there. So we had like our B man there beside us.
That's right. So, you know, I knew that was going to happen.
It's quite a crew.
That's going to be coming out in February. They're going to start sending out the long shot beers and six packs. And I tell you, this is going to be a great six pack. There's Rod's
Weizenbach, right?
Weizenbach and Mike's double IPA. They're two excellent beers. And have they announced what
the grape ale?
Grape ale?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, I was a fan of the Weizen.
What type of grape?
It's a pale ale with grape ale. It's essentially a fruit beer.
I'm sorry. It was the worst one of the.
Yeah, I like the
three.
I'm not gonna comment.
I'm gonna comment.
Yeah, you
let it go, Jason.
Yeah, what? No, I thought that there was a rye IPA and there was a Weizen.
Yeah.
And I was taken with the Weizen, and then but it's a Weizen with like some citrus in it.
Yeah, some orange.
But I thought it was really well done. And but the guy who had the rye IPA, he said, "Look," he goes, "I'm trying to fight the fruit beer." Because these other two are fruit beers. I want something that's not a fruit beer in the six pack, you know, for once. Mm. And that convinced me because the rye IPA was really good too.
Yeah.
And so, but I tell you, if it was the rye IPA or the Weizen, and you know the Weizenbach and the double IPA, it would have been like one of the greatest six packs you could buy on the market.
Yeah. Well, I think the grape ale will be. You know, it's not like obnoxiously grape or something like that. It's just a of a boring pale ale because of it. I think
it wasn't even a good pale ale.
Well, that's the pilot brew now.
The sponsors are lining up for this show,
like,
aren't they?
Okay, abort.
So the beer that's going to be distributed is going to be built or brewed in their Cincinnati brewery, their 145 barrel system.
Yeah. Well,
Oh, by the way, I think it's going to be the largest batch of double IP ever made.
Oh, I imagine it is.
That's historical right there.
Yeah.
And I tasted the one that they brewed already.
Yeah.
For the awards ceremony, that was really good. I thought that was excellent.
They did a really great job.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, it was different than your beer, of course, because it's hard for to scale up like that.
Right.
But they did a really good job. I thought it was a really good beer.
Yeah, if they could put out something just like that.
If they put out a six pack of that, I mean, I'd be there. You go.
I'll be buying that and throwing four bottles away if I had to. But the Weizen's a good. We're definitely gonna like
the Weizen. The Weizenbach. Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. That's a good one too.
Yeah.
And usually I buy. Aventinas for like Halloween and stuff. I'll be going with that one instead.
There you go.
That's my new Halloween beer. All right. So still four bottles, two Weizenbach, two of the double IPA, still makes it worth buying the six pack, even if you're going to feed the great pale ale to somebody else.
Well, just convince your wife that she'll love that beer. So.
Yeah, I guess. Good luck. I don't know. I don't know how the it's chosen by a bunch of drunkards on the floor of the GABF,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, the people of the GABF chose it.
Yeah, and then there's like a cute girl going, oh, I brewed this one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Winner!
Sex sells.
Yeah. Well.
We're going to have a Mike McDole day, I think, in like December.
Is it a holiday or something?
We're going to be.
We're going to buy
a pallet of the 56 cases of this beer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just pile it up in the center of the showroom and just have them standing there and be like, here you go.
Cool.
Yeah.
Are you really?
Dead. Hell yeah.
You guys are off the charts, man.
Yeah.
Mike's been on a victory tour since the moment he won.
Yeah, I walked in here. I figured everybody was still here from last night's show.
Pretty much. He's on a victory tour.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, sign me up for that party.
Okay.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time.
Yeah. Oh, you're not invited,
you're
Mike.
I think I'll be taking a nap about that.
As long as you bring beer, you can come.
I always bring beer.
Yes, I know. As long as you bring beer, you can come.
There'll be a pallet of beer, and he'll still bring beer.
I know.
Yeah, well, I'll bring my version of that beer there.
So he's there at the awards at the long shot.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I brought some beer. If any.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Well, we brewed 20 barrels, you might as well serve this.
No, I was able to do a side-by-side tasting.
Right.
With the Sam Adams brewer.
Yeah.
Their beer and my beer. And mine was,
probably a little bit better.
Better, clearer, bigger mouthfeel.
Yeah.
But theirs is good beer. I mean, it was more like yours, Jamil. Sort of like dried out too much.
No, wait a minute, Mike. Since you brought this up, who makes a better double IPA, or me?
Hey, numbers don't count.
Come on, Mike.
All right.
Come on, Mike.
You do, yeah.
Okay, and?
Bullshit.
And if you had entered the long shot, this would all be about you, not me. I know. It's just the fact of life. I mean, I can't even argue it.
Yeah. Them's the facts right there.
I gotta get the door to the studio enlarged.
Yeah, no.
Jamil's gonna enter a fruit
beer.
Too
much going on here, yeah.
Y'all enter a grape pale ale.
There you go. That's competitive.
Yeah. Well, did you have a great time at the JABF?
I had a real good time, yeah. I had a lot of my homies there, including the Brewing Network. My two sons were there, and they had a little bit of an entourage, and all the B3 people were there, too.
Sons were like I would imagine your sons would be. Really nice. Very polite.
Yeah, they're pretty square guys.
Laid back.
Right.
Good guys. Yeah. I had the most wonderful time there, and I spent most of my time signing books. But
didn't want to pay the $2.
Yeah, at one point, I found myself sitting there signing books, and on my left is Charlie Papazian, and on my right is John Palmer. I'm sitting here going, how in the world am I sitting here signing books between these two?
Whoever would have thought.
Oh, yeah. Back when I was like, firing up my Mr. Beer kit.
Right.
Pretty cool. Yeah. I was like, I need a picture of this.
Come a long way in a short amount of time.
Yeah, that was really...
How long ago was that, Jamil? When did you make your first batch of beer?
Like 99.
Yeah, it's not that long ago.
Mr. Beer Kit in 98, and then I forgot about it until like June of 99, and then brewed it and was horrible.
Yeah.
come a long ways, Jamil. Good work. I'm proud of you.
Well, and they say it's not where you start from, but where, you start the journey, it's where you end up. Yeah. So yeah, you gotta make all your focus on where you're headed to and where you want to end up.
So what's next? Are you gonna like try the Papazian way, like ferment in outer space or something, or?
Is that the Papazian way? Outer space?
He's hypothesized. He's thought about it. I mean, what would happen?
Well, I think they've done fermentation tests in outer space already. Yeah. They've done some yeast work in outer space.
I didn't know that. Never. There you go.
Well, anyways, from the GABF, the Brewing Network was there. You guys know that. And they did some shows, and that audio is available tonight, I think.
We put it up tonight.
On the site.
Good shows. Just three different shows from us, and then soon also will be up the Inside the Brewer Studio panels that Tom Daldorf did, which were four all-star panels of brewers. It's all going to be up on the site. So,
cool. Yeah, I'm excited to listen to all that stuff. I didn't get a chance to hear any of it. I was on the air for like 5 minutes.
Yeah, five quick minutes.
And then I was out of there, and then... You know, most of the time I was either laying down because my back was killing me, or I was signing books, or
drinking beer.
Yeah, drinking beer at the Falling Rock. Yeah, that first night I got there, Wednesday night, I think I had like 8 pints, and I actually didn't feel too bad.
You're pretty cool when you're hammered.
I.
Oh, he was fun that night.
Yeah, he kind of lets go.
He was in good shape.
I felt fine. I felt fine the next morning. I don't know why. I was focusing more on the lower alcohol beers. So, you know, anything, you know, above 9%, I didn't try.
Smart.
Yeah,
you had a long weekend.
I was pacing myself. So, you know, I stuck towards the lower beers.
We had to drink McDowell's IPA later, probably. So,
yeah.
You had to wait for that pinnacle point.
Yeah, well, you know, in the morning of the awards, like 10 o'clock in the morning, I had like several little plastic cups of the double IPA. And I was like pretty buzzed by the time I left the awards.
IPA for breakfast.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. All right, so we're going to be talking about brown porter tonight.
Okay, there we go. I brought a sample. I'm curious what you think later. So.
Yeah. Have you had a good brown porter?
No. Well, just mine.
Yeah.
That I brewed.
So by definition, it's good.
It's good.
I mean, it's have drinkable. You ever tried Sam Smith's Taddy Porter?
No.
That's a good brown porter. That is probably the most classic example of the style. Yeah, BevMo has it. Mm-hmm. It's brought over here quite a bit. Hmm. And that's actually a pretty darn good example of a brown porter.
It's an interesting style, brown porter. I mean,
yeah, like, yeah.
It's open to interpretation just by reading it. And I mean,
yeah.
To a point. I mean, there's some crossing there, you know, with the mild.
Open to interpretation. I don't know. Really open. And once you have a few of the examples that are out there,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty clear what they are,
okay.
I think. You know, I think there's quite a bit of leeway.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, there's certain key things that are, I think, part of the style.
Is it definitely porter derived? I mean, did...
Yeah, it's all in that kind of brown beer type of, you know, it's in between, you know, it's in that beer space that's defined by mild ale, Southern English brown, and robust porter. So if you imagine those three kind of in a triangle.
It's somewhere in between there.
Brown porter's right in the middle of that.
Nice. That's a tough one.
Do you want to go over the characteristics of brown porter?
I could... attempt to do so.
Yeah.
Well,
dive in, buddy.
All right, here we go.
I'll enjoy your sample of brown porter you brought with you.
How about after I give a description, can you give me some feedback? Honest feedback.
Just sure.
Rip it. Just
okay.
Bring it strong.
Okay.
All right. So the aroma in a brown porter, there's definitely some hints of roastiness, maybe some chocolate coming through. There are also other aromas coming through, a bready and nutty, grainy, toffee, maybe some caramel notes coming through in the nose. The English hop is moderate to none. Esters, very minimal. And, of course, no diacetyl. And I think I'm just going to start saying no diacetyl for all beers, but you can correct me on that later. Visually, it should be light to dark brown with some ruby highlights if you hold it up to a light, clear. Head retention should be, you know, off-white to tan. It's a session beer. You know, overall, the flavor is mildly roasty, malt character, hints of chocolate. It's obviously caramel and nutty and toffee in flavor. No harsh roast astringency. You don't want it to just have that brutal, you know, black roasted astringency coming through. Medium-low hop flavor. Definitely malt. Definitely a malt-forward beer and balance. Well-attenuated, dry finish. Overall, it's an English dark ale. Low gravity. Lower than your robust porter. More roast than a brown ale, like a Southern English brown. And it's a perfect beer to drink, I think, for the fall weather. Because it visually just kind of fits in the fall, you know, you're in a beer you want to drink a lot of. So I'm kind of curious what you think of my attempt at a brown porter here. So would you like to try some, Justin?
Yeah, brown porter is pretty much considered a an English style of beer. And all the English styles can have some diacetyl.
Okay.
A little bit of buttery character, you know, subtle amounts, especially when you're kind of getting a caramel or a toffee or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of diacetyl can actually be a good thing. Adds to the mouthfeel, especially on a lot of those lower gravity English beers.
Now, are these breweries that are brewing these beers trying to do that? Are they trying to get...
It's just a character of their yeast and their process.
Okay.
Yeah. Some of them more so than others.
Okay.
On this,
is that good?
I think I don't think you're quite roasty enough.
Really,
it's a delicate balancing act between, you know, robust porter, which is pretty darn roasty,
mm-hmm.
and the brown ale and the mild.
Mm-hmm.
The brown ale and the mild. This is closer to maybe a Northern English or a Southern English.
I mean, it's a 1040 gravity on this, finished out at 06.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So
that's good.
Dry.
I think, I think all that part. And I think you need a little bit more, I think it's missing some of the English esters
mm-hmm.
in the aroma.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit in the flavor, but not quite what I would expect. I think it needs a little more kind of a, you know, English fruitiness kind of character to it. You know, mm-hmm. it's pretty clean.
Right. Well, it was not an English yeast.
Oh, okay. What yeast did you use?
Bock yeast.
Oh, okay. Well, that would explain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fermented hot.
So,
58.
Yeah. And, you know, I get some fruitiness in the flavor,
mm-hmm.
but not in the aroma, or at least the kind of fruitiness I'm looking for, that English yeast character.
Mm-hmm. So
I think you really got to use an English yeast for this.
Okay.
And I think it needs a touch more roast.
A little bit more roast.
Yeah. Because it's kind of right in there. If you have Sam Smith's Taddy Porter, you'll see what I'm saying. There's a bit of roasty in there.
Okay.
Good beer, but I think it needs those adjustments. What do you think, Mike?
Well, I'm not an expert on the style, but I definitely think it's a very clean, very drinkable beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I would definitely have a couple of pints of this, and it's certainly in that session beer range that I'd be looking for.
So you were talking about the triangle earlier. It's definitely like in the English brown, Southern English brown category.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's not really,
yeah,
it doesn't have the roastiness
kinda,
that you're
looking
for.
It's more kind of, you know, the Northern English, more like a Newcastle.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in between a Newcastle and maybe a Southern, or a Newcastle and... But you see what I'm saying on the Newcastle? It's a little
mm-hmm.
darker than a Newcastle. But I think if you just darken it up a little bit more, maybe you'd be closer to a brown porter.
Okay.
So one of the things I found that's critical in brown porter is actually brown malt.
Yeah, they talk about that in the guidelines.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You got to use brown malt historically.
I tried making it, you know, a bunch of different times until I used brown malt. It wasn't really right. Because I was trying to make, you know, Sam Smith Taddy Porter. And... I was actually kind of surprised that until I did that, it didn't seem, you know, it was such a huge difference. It was a small amount of brown malt, like, you know, a pound in a 5-gallon batch. But it made a dramatic difference in the overall flavor. It adds a lot of background kind of roastiness. That's very important. Anyways, when we come back from break, we will get into the recipe, how you make this bad boy, and I got a nice recipe for brown porter. We'll be back right after this.
Coming this fall.
Four beer kits and a bag of sanitizer? That'll be $4,000 for shipping.
Never! I won't pay more than $20 for shipping.
Ha ha ha! You will not find a deal like that now. Northern Brewers' flat rate shipping promotion is finished.
No! I'll never pay that much! Never!
My patience wears thin, young home brewer. You must pay too much for shipping.
Never fear! Northern Brewer's here!
Foolish Northern Brewer! Your flat rate shipping promotion has ended!
No, sir! Now we got $7.99 flat rate shipping all the time over here!
Northern Brewer has all of your home brewing, wine, mead, cider, and soda making needs. And a complete line of award-winning beer kits, including the intergalactically boozy Bourbon Barrel Porter. Still with cheap-ass shipping. Place an order at northernbrewer.com and get some flat rate $7.99 shipping action. Offer good in contiguous U.S. only. Some heavy and or bulky items are excluded, such as glass bottles, sacks of grain, bulk DME, and oak barrels.
Take that, guy. $7.99 flat rate shipping.
Ah, my retina!
Retina? Damn near killed ya.
What have you gotten out of a vial of White Labs yeast?
WLP-001. Cal Ale, baby!
23, Burton Ale.
008, East Coast Ale.
Cal Common. WLP-810.
It's gonna be WLP-400 with beer!
I got a sweet hoodie for my vial.
Huh?
White Labs, your source for great brewer's yeast, would like to invite all homebrewers to join the White Labs Customer Club. Redeem your empty vials for great White Labs merchandise and products. Free yeast, glassware, t-shirts, baseball caps, sweatshirts, polo shirts, and you won't believe what you'll get for 5,000 vials. Members also receive a newsletter packed with White Labs updates and facts, interviews with professional brewers, brew your own clone recipes, beercook.com recipes, and customer club stories. The White Labs Customer Club. Save your vials and get in the club. White Labs. It's all in the vial.
Valley Brewing Company is Stockton's premier microbrewery and family restaurant in the heart of Stockton, California, just off the Miracle Mile. Brewmaster Steve Altamari crafts a full array of award-winning ales and specialty beers, from their classic English mild London Tavern Ale to their Abbey Quadruple Decadence 12, and everything in between. And the best part is, Valley Brewing will soon be distributing their handcrafted beers, so you don't have to visit California to try them. Check your local retailer in the coming months for fresh arrivals from California's Central Valley and get a taste of one of California's oldest brewing traditions. To find out more about Valley Brewing's historic past, their selection of beers, or family-friendly restaurant, visit them online at valleybrew.com or come on by and sample the beer at 157 West Adams Street in Stockton, California. Valley Brewing Company. With honesty and integrity, they offer great beer and a fun family atmosphere that you're gonna love.
Wow! I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
Now, back to the Jameel Show.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't.
All right, we're back. We're talking about brown porter.
And I feel good. You know, I really feel good always coming here. Like, I look forward to this every month. I'm dead serious.
You seem a little worked up. I don't know.
No.
I think it's because I didn't like that first beer.
That doesn't bother me at all.
Sure.
I'm going to drink it.
Okay. Yeah,
I think it's a tasty beer, and
I just had one. Yeah, I just, you know, I was fine, and I tell you, I've had far worse at most brew pubs. That's for sure.
I'd be crushed if you lied to me. So the fact that you didn't,
McDowell knows this. McDowell can take it. I give him.
That's our deal. I mean, I told you, long time ago too.
I give it to him straight.
Don't gloss over it. Give me the straight, bare facts. And I've gotten some pretty...
He's gotten kicked in the nuts a few times,
too.
Oh,
yeah, definitely. You know. I come up to him all proud and, bubbly. Hey, check out this beer.
And he just rips you apart.
Oh,
it's perfect.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
That's what you want, though.
Knocks me down.
I give him the honest feedback. Yeah. And the only beer of his I didn't like...
Strong Scotch Ale, I think.
Yep, exactly. That was you broke my heart on that one.
I haven't forgotten.
That did really well, by the way.
Interesting thing is... You can pick out the one beer I didn't like. Now, see, John, you have the one beer I didn't like.
Hey, it's okay.
You see? And take solace in the fact that everybody else liked it. Well, what the hell do they know? Let's see here. All right, so... Porter. So I was trying to make kind of like a clone of Sam Smith's Taddy Porter. Because I tried all sorts of different things. I tried all sorts of different recipes. I tried different yeast. I tried different temperatures. I tried different grain bills. I tried different base malts. And I could never really quite dial in the brown porter until, you know, I read something somewhere or I came across brown malt. That was it. I came across brown malt.
Go figure.
At some place where I'd never seen it before. And so I bought like a big sack of brown malt and I'm like, okay, now what do I use this in? I couldn't find anything to use it in. And I'm like, brown porter. So I tried in brown porter. Sure enough. Now you don't want to use too much, but sure enough, it's like, it makes that beer so much more like Sam Smith's Taddy Porter, which is, I think, a great beer that, you really can't go without it. It's one of those, odd components that's, brown malt's kind of, it's got a, if you chew up a handful of brown malt, it's kind of a dry, slightly, roasty malt, kind of toasty, kind of like almost... like a burnt toast, but not quite that burnt, you know? Where you'd pull it out and you go, well, it's more, that toast's a little more dark than I wanted, but, what the heck, I'm not going to make another piece of toast. versus the thing like caught on fire, that would be, a piece of toast you'd toss and...
Start over.
Yeah, start over, exactly. So, that's kind of the difference there. All right, so for brown porter, you're targeting that... kind of toasty, caramelly, slightly roasty space in between mild and Southern English, Northern English, and robust porter. If you get too roasty, it's too much like a robust porter. If you're not roasty enough, it starts tending more towards, the other three.
Brown ales.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and then body-wise and gravity-wise, you're kind of in between the English brown ales, but not as low as, a mild, not as high as a robust porter. Again, it's kind of in that middle space. Same thing for hopping. So it may have, more bittering and more hops than a mild, but it shouldn't have anywhere near what a robust porter would have. It's kind of in that middle space there. For my recipe, this is again for a 6-gallon batch. And did you want to give your recipe for your brown? Do you have it with you or no?
Let me think about it.
Okay.
Later, I will.
Okay. Yeah. For my recipe here, this is to make 6 gallons of wort at the end of the boil. You're going to have an original gravity of 1052 or 12.8 Plato. Final gravity, we're going to target around 1.013 or 3.3 Plato. That's about a 74% attenuation. IBUs, 27 IBUs, colors 24 SRM. That's going to give you about 5.1% alcohol by volume. And let's see here. If you're an extract brewer, you're going to go with that English pale ale extract, liquid malt extract, 6.8 pounds or 3.08 kilograms. If you're all grain, you're going to go with British pale ale malt. And I like the crisp Maris Otter is really, I think, a great base malt. I know you use that a lot.
Good for breakfast, too.
I think McDowell used to eat a little, sprinkle it in your Wheaties.
Yeah.
No, I make the Firestone Walker double barrel clone. So.
Using that?
That's my English beer.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's, okay.
Wow, you do.
Yeah.
<All right>.
And so if you're all grain, you're going to use 9.5 pounds or 4.31 kilograms of that British pale ale malt. If you can't get crisp, any high-quality British pale ale malt, it's darker kiln that has more of that biscuity background that's so important in an English beer. Mash at 152 degrees Fahrenheit or 67 degrees C till converted. And then the other grains you're going to use, brown malt, again, critical for this. So this brown malt's going to have a color range around 60 to 70 Lovibond. I like to use a pound or 0.45 kilograms. Same amount of crystal malt, crystal 40, a pound or 0.45 kilograms of crystal 40. And then chocolate malt, to give it a bit of that roastiness. This you can dial up or down. This is a tricky part right here. Now for me, using chocolate malt, 350 degree Lovibond, 10 ounces or 284 grams.
That's a lot.
Yeah. 6 gallons. Now this is just about right. It's at 10 ounces, you're going to end up just slightly roastier than a Sam Smith's Taddy Porter.
But it ages.
Exactly. And that's what I was thinking, too. I'm like, gosh, should I dial that down a little bit more? I'm like, no.
4 months from now, though?
Yeah, a couple of months, and a little of that roast drops out, you know, because it gets that real fine, powdery malt constituent that's, you know, suspended in this beer. Mm-hmm. And once it powders out onto the bottom of the bottle, you don't taste it as much anymore.
Right.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, John. Mm-hmm. So, you know, maybe you'd go down to 9 ounces.
But
eight ounces, I think, is going to be too low.
Right.
9 ounces might be. Now, it just depends on what your malt supplier is. You may have to adjust this up and down. And this is the critical dial on this beer, I think. You know, every beer has its own critical component,
right,
where you...
It's the thumb screw.
Yeah, exactly. There's one ingredient that you have to dial up or down to get it just right.
Mm-hmm.
And for this beer, that's it.
On my American Brown Ale, I have the chocolate malt is basically that. Now, what I'll do is, because I've had, like, it varies depending on, you know, sometimes the grind of the malt could be different, or the roast could be slightly different on the chocolate. I'll buy a pound of it for my 12-gallon batch, but I'll add half into the mash, and then I'll see how the color develops, and I'll taste the mash and see, you know, I can taste, you know, how much chocolate's in there. And I'll either add the rest or not, or some of it or whatever, based on what I find.
That's a good idea.
And you can do that similar with this beer as well.
Now, you're doing it by taste. Is that because grains are changing each year?
Well, you know, obviously I'm tasting, you know, unboiled, unfermented wort. But it just goes into your, like, information cycle, right? Because, sure, and then 2 months later you drink the finished beer and you go, okay. You know, you might make the connection and the next time be able to adjust in flight.
Yeah, that's a good point. Make a mental note of, you know, Mike does that also with, like, DME for the target gravity and all these things.
Sure, yeah, all the ways. You just don't, like, make a recipe and then wait.
And they go, oh, damn, it didn't work.
Comes out of the fermenter and go, wait, well, this isn't what I expected. Yeah. No, you got to, like,
make your tweaks while you're in
drive
process.
Drive that baby home,
Yeah. That's a good tip. That's a big point of the brewer makes the beer. You know, you can take any recipe, but...
It's 20% of it, a recipe.
Yeah, the brewer is a really critical part. Let's see. For hops, again, not a whole lot of hops. I use Fuggles for the bittering hop at 5% alpha acid, a 60-minute addition of 1.25 ounce and 1.25 ounces, 35 grams. And then I like a 10-minute addition of the same hop, Fuggles pellets, 5% alpha acid, a half ounce, 14 grams at 10 minutes, just to give a little bit of the hop character in there.
Right.
I noticed you have a little bit in your beer. It seemed like a nice little floral hop.
Mm-hmm.
The Fuggles a little more earthy, a little more English kind of a character to it. And that's kind of why I go with that. Yeast for fermenting this bad boy, I go with... an English ale yeast, and I go with either White Labs WLP 013 London Ale or Y Yeast 1028 London Ale. If you're a dry yeast user, the Danstar Nottingham is a good choice. You want something a little more attenuative than the one of our other favorites, the WLP 002, the English ale. You know, you go with something that attenuates a little bit more, a little drier, because like you were saying...
You definitely want to drive.
Like you were saying earlier. Woo, microphone on a spin.
Line mics.
Like you were saying earlier, John, and like your beer is, it needs to have kind of a dry finish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it shouldn't be a sweet finish. Mm-hmm. It's not a sweet beer. It's more of a drier beer. And so you want those a little more attenuating English yeast.
Does yours dry? Is your recipe that you've given, does that finish out dry? Or
it finishes out fairly dry. You know, the brown malt and the chocolate malt, those are dry malts anyways.
Okay.
You know, they only ferment a tiny bit anyways.
Right.
And the crystal, it's, 10% crystal 40, which leaves a little bit of sweetness, but...
balances the chocolate.
Yeah, and there's quite a bit of roasty dryness in there, so... and the brown malt adds a real dryness as well. If you're going to do liquid yeast, you need like 2 liquid yeast packs, or you know, make yourself an appropriate starter with 1 pack. You'd need 1 pack of yeast, liquid pack of yeast, and 2-liter starter. If you've got a stir plate, you can get away with a 1-liter starter and 1 pack of yeast. That'll give you the equivalent of 2. And for dry yeast, you're looking at about 10 grams.
Two packs.
Yeah.
Okay.
Get you right in there. And then carbonate the beer, you know, soft carbonation, 1.5 to 2 volumes. Serve a little bit warm, 52 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit, 11 to 13 degrees C. That gets you right in there. You know, you want that yeast character to come out and the malt to come out on that beer and kind of a mellow kind of carbonation on that thing.
Now, why did you use, was the Burton yeast?
London.
The London Ale.
London.
Why did you choose that over like a British or a European or a... Or you already said the English, but why would what is it about that yeast that you choose?
Well, I like that it gives a good English yeast character, and you know it attenuates a little bit more.
Okay.
So you know the beer will finish a little drier.
Okay.
And so I think that's an important part of this beer.
Now, does it contribute any diacetyl flavors that you?
All the English yeast can give you some diacetyl.
Okay.
You know, it depends on how you treat the beer. If you, you know, the funny thing is, if you pitch too much yeast, you can actually end up with diacetyl.
Okay. Yeah, fair. Yeah.
You know, if you pitch not enough yeast, you can end up with diacetyl. If you pitch too warm, you can end up with diacetyl. You can pitch too cold, you can end up with diacetyl. There's a lot of little different, you know, on an ale yeast, you know, there's a lot of different things that control the production of diacetyl in the beer.
And you mentioned about chocolate malts. I mean, you're like, you know, 10 ounces is good, but 9 maybe not too much. What about, like, water? How important is water with using dark malts in a beer like this? I mean, the sulfates in the water, can you get a harsh astringency if you have high, hard water? I mean, if softer the water, maybe you more astringency come through. I don't know. You tell me.
Well...
I mean, this is a topic.
Yeah, it's a balancing act of a whole bunch of different aspects. But assuming that the majority of people listening, 80% of the people listening have a moderately hard water. That's just like the fact of the world, right?
Okay.
So for the majority of people out there,
you can drink it.
You know, they would just brew this and not mess with, you know, the mineral content of you just maybe with some lactic acid or phosphoric acid to adjust your mash pH.
Right.
Or if you're extract brewing, you wouldn't worry about it at all, really.
Okay.
But, you know, so for the majority of people, they're, you know, they're right in there. It's not an issue. If you have, like, super soft water, yeah, maybe you toss in, you know, a quarter teaspoon of, like, gypsum and, you know, a quarter teaspoon of chalk or something.
Okay.
And, you know, just something to kind of bring the water up a little bit. If you have super hard water, yeah, maybe you need to cut it with some distilled water. But most of those people that are in those extremes...
Right.
They already know that, and they're already making some adjustments because their water is so extreme.
Yeah.
Right. You know, they brewed other things before. This isn't their first beer.
Right.
And they know that, they need to use like 50% distilled, or they're making their water from scratch or whatever. But, you know, for the majority of people out there, this is going to brew up just fine with the standard water that 80% of the world's using.
What is entire in the guidelines? It's
entire
like right. source so, of blending. I mean,
right. So
what is
porters? I mean, porters long ago.
Yeah.
Back when you know the publicans used to, you know, they'd have like a mild beer. They'd have you know a old beer, which is a beer that had been around and kind of gone sour, and they'd have like a pale beer, and so they have you know, like a couple of dark beers and a paler beer, and you know and people would come in. And they'd ask for blends of the different beers, and this porter beer they would have would be called entire. They would blend the three threads, the three different beers,
right,
into this one drink.
Okay,
right, and it was quite popular.
So the entire crop of beer,
right? Right. So these three different like the fresher beer, the stale beer, you know, the sour beer, and you know the highly the big sweet beer, the mild, and all these things. They would blend these together to make, you know, a really nice tasting beer. The problem was it took them like, you know, forever to blend up these three beers because it wasn't like, you know, regular old pressurized faucets. They'd be like opening up the wooden, you know, kegs. Yeah, the old barrels and stuff and pouring these and they'd have to mix these up on the fly and, you know, people might want different blends or whatever. So anyways, they would mix these three threads and it would be called entire or entire butt, right? And this one guy, he figured out a way to, he crafted a recipe that kind of mimicked this. And the great thing was it didn't require all this blending. It was like the beer's already done. You just poured it. You served it. And there you go.
Perfect.
You know, saved a bunch of time. Yeah. Everybody's like, hey, great. You know, it was probably like cheaper to do because they didn't have to maintain three different beers.
The labor.
And it became very popular with, they say, you know, the laborers or the porters or, you know, or the supporters that brought it or, you know, the actual story how it got the name porter is not really clear, but so that's how they kind of got rid of the three threads. The porter was like the very first industrialized beer too.
Just
mass produced.
Oh, yeah. Really?
They started building these fermenters that would hold, you know, like half million barrels or whatever they were. They were like, you know, giant buildings. They would build these new vats. Aging vats where the beer needed to be aged for a certain period of time to kind of sour up a little bit and
right.
things like that.
It was a flavor.
And actually, it's interesting how this actually keys back to Rodenbach and sour beers. But, you know, they would have in these vats, they would have like dinner parties and stuff to celebrate the opening of the new vat.
Nice.
So these giant vats in London, and at one point, it's reported that one of the vats burst open and reportedly killed like eight people as it flooded the street and, like, you know.
It's a good death.
Killed a bunch of people. Yeah. You know, that's how big this. And it's like one brewery was making something like, you know, a million barrels a year.
Whoa.
Or, you know, some ridiculous amount. And this is back, you know, this was like the first industrialized brewing. And, you know, that became the beer that everybody was drinking was porter.
Now, is that a result because of the lower gravity? Because it was more of a, session beer. I mean, something like 4.5%,
you know,
maybe.
I don't know what.
Or just
because
it tastes so damn good and everybody wanted to drink it?
Exactly.
Usually the case.
That was maybe more of the case. Huh. But, yeah, the interesting thing on Rodenbach is the founder of Rodenbach, he was actually studying to be a brewer in England. And one of the things that I may be getting the story wrong, but it's sort of like this, where he learned in England that, you know, by aging the beer, they were able to charge more for the beer.
Okay. By aging the beer,
they were charging more for aged beer than young beer.
There's a lager character.
Right, okay. Right. And it wasn't that; it was actually, and the beers would sour up. You know, eventually they'd get a little culture going in those giant fats. So they couldn't clean them very well. They get a little bit of sourness to them.
Without a flavor that they
wanted. So what? Well, and Rodenbach, you know, he goes back and sets up this brewery, and sure enough. You know, he figures, you know, aging the beer and having a little bit of sourness is an important part of it. And we have Rodenbach Grand Cru to this day, mm-hmm. and a blended beer. So he would age and sour his beer, and the full soured one, and then they have a younger beer, and they blend it. That's Rodenbach.
Okay.
Okay, and the Grand Cru is the all soured beer.
Right.
So they've been doing that since, you know, way back in the 1800s.
Okay. Huh.
So it's actually pretty cool.
Wow.
Anyway, so
I like,
you know,
that though. A lot of history in this.
Yeah, I'm full of useless knowledge. I tell my wife that all the time, or maybe she tells me. I'm not sure. Anyways, so we're gonna take a short break, and when we come back, we will talk about. We'll probably take some
questions
from the chat room or from the peanut gallery or what have you. We'll be back right after this.
And you're back
with the Ultimate Homebrewing Show, where today's topic is
dark beer. But first, let's go to the phones.
Who are we talking to?
Jamel? Jamel Zanishev?
What can we do for you, Jamel?
What were you guys saying about dark beer?
All dark beer is really strong.
And bitter.
Well, you guys might want to look for a new source of brewing knowledge.
We're using Poor Harold's Almanac, 1947. You know of something better?
Brewing Classic Styles by Jamil Zanishev and John Palmer. 80 award-winning recipes and how to brew them by the number one names in home brewing.
Extract, partial mash, all grain, we cover it all.
Reserve your copy today at the Brewing Network store.
I will find one just for you.
Visit thebrewingnetwork.com for more details on Brewing Classic Styles, the homebrew book of the year.
So, do you cover Bock beer in there?
You betcha.
Because I've been saving all the sludge from my fermenter so I can make some real soon.
Oh man, you really need this book.
Order your copy today.
Visit thebrewingnetwork.com, the official broadcaster of the Great American Beer Festival.
If you like the prices you get from the major homebrew shops but live on the wrong coast, or if your local homebrew shop doesn't carry what you need, or if you just want a shop where you are appreciated as a customer and treated like a friend, head on over to the Do-It-Yourself Brewing Company at DIYbrewing.com. They have an extensive selection and are bringing new products in on a daily basis. In fact, if you need something they don't have, just let them know, and they'll get it for you as soon as humanly possible. Check out all their products, recipe kits, winemaking supplies, and specials at DIYbrewing.com. With everything from Ferminators to Carboys, DIY Brewing either has what you need or can get it fast. At DIY, they're homebrewers helping homebrewers get what you need. Visit them in Rollinsworth, New Hampshire. Call 603-205-4168. And stop by DIYbrewing.com and get brewing. And during the month of October, get $5 off any $50 or more order with coupon code BN. Do it yourself with a little help from DIY Brewing.
Hi, I'm Sean O'Sullivan, the brewmaster and co-founder of the 21st Amendment Brewery and Restaurant in San Francisco. 6 years ago, Nico Freccia and I opened the 21st Amendment on 2nd Street with the intent of bringing back the local neighborhood brewpub. Well, the neighborhood has really changed over the years, but the 21st Amendment still remains a great place for people to meet over a terrific meal and a tasty pint of beer. In the past, the only way you could enjoy the 21st Amendment's handcrafted beers was at the brewpub. Well, all that has changed. Now, the 21st Amendment beers are available in cans. That's right, cans. When was the last time you had a great beer in a can? Well, that day has come. We're offering our world-famous Watermelon Wheat and 21A IPA in cans. Cans are a better package than glass because cans keep the beer fresher longer, but you can also take cans to places where bottles can't go, like the beach, lake, golf courses, and sporting events. So join us in the revolution to take back the can from the big breweries and crack open a cold 21A craft beer. Beer in a can. The 21st Amendment, 563 2nd Street in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park.
Live. Beer Radio. The Brewing Network.
The Brewcasters.
If you're just starting, don't be discouraged by all this stuff. It's exactly. So easy.
Just throw it together.
You're put some sugar and some water and some yeast in there.
Yeah.
The Brewing Network.
This is the Jameel Show.
Hey, howdy, hey, we're back.
Yeehaw.
You know, at the GABF, Push, Charlie, he came out.
Good old Push.
And I gave him just a load of crap just from day one, from minute one till the time you left. I rode him hard.
You probably so appreciated that.
Yeah, well, he seemed to have a smile on his face. I just gave him a hard time. I felt bad. He's a nice guy, but...
talented dude.
And that's what I was wondering is how they get those really deep voices on. And they must be processing the daylights out of that audio because, you know, he's just a little feller.
A little feller with a lot of balls.
Oh, he's a nice guy. Here, I don't want to start giving crap again.
No.
I was very...
was very you wouldn't know it was him, yeah. He's probably ecstatic right now. Yes.
Why do you keep turning off McDowell's mic? Jesus Christ, what's wrong with you? That's McDowell sitting over there.
Breaks.
Sounds like you're apologizing, Jameel. Come on,
I shouldn't. I shouldn't do that.
Sorry, Push.
Why would I do that?
Yeah.
Why would I apologize to him?
No need to. I've had Push's beer, and it's very, very good.
I think he said two or three times, he goes, you know, you're a lot different than I imagined you'd be.
Did he exaggerate? Can you share? Or
okay. No, I just think he didn't figure like visually me on being such a ball buster, but everybody else knows I am, so I think he was surprised. Everyone else is used to it, right? Yeah. You are used to it,
pretty
aren't
much,
you?
Yeah, pretty,
huh?
Pretty
huh?
Much.
Come on.
Yeah, sure.
Everybody say yes.
Yes, I guess I am.
That's all right. Yeah. Thank you, sir. May we have another?
You want questions?
Yeah, questions. Please.
A lot of people in the chat tonight. They're all hanging out in there and having a good time. One of your listeners says that he's going to do your robust porter recipe. He's going to pitch a Y Yeast ESB cake from your Southern English Brown recipe that he brewed.
Uh-huh.
And he wants to know your thoughts about how that might turn out, or what effect.
I think that'll turn out just fine. I think in most of the yeasts, you know, they do have different characters to them that will, present more malt, or, you know, accentuate more hops, or, you know, more fruitiness in this case. Because I usually do my Robust Porter as an American type of style. I use a 1056 or Cal Ale yeast in order to do the Robust Porter. And that ESB cake is going to give you some English fruitiness. It's going to attenuate less than the Cal Ale yeast or the 1056 will. So, you know, it'll be fine as is, but, you know, if you're going to do that on a regular basis, you might want to start tweaking the recipe, you know, back off a little bit on maybe some of the crystal malts, change your mash temperature, you know, drop your mash temperature a degree or two, different things like that in order to make sure that it's still a nice balanced beer. We were talking earlier, the four of us, John and McDole and McChad and myself, and we were talking about how, you know, balance is everything. We had this, the two beers that Nick brought us. You know, one of them, you know, was nice. It was a good beer, but, you know, when we got the second beer that was a little bolder and it was a little more balanced with a little more hop, and we really liked that beer. We were all like, oh, you know, the first one was good, but this one's really good.
Yeah, yeah.
We were like, we would buy a case of that. Hmm. And it was all about balance, I think we were all saying.
It's hard to do.
So it makes a big difference. So when you change yeast like that, you have to be, have some concern about balance.
Do you think he's pitching too much yeast using a cake?
Well, yeah. If you don't want to use the whole cake, you want to use a portion of it.
Okay.
You want to rinse out the crud out of that, and just use the right amount of yeast. So use the pitching rate calculator at www.mrmalty.com. Get a plug in there. You know.
There you go.
There you go.
All right, couple
Justin
more
turned
questions.
Off his own microphone now. He's trying microphone turning off mode tonight.
Trying to keep everything clean in here. A couple questions.
Sanitizer
about your English ale yeast use. One question is just simply, why do you use it? And kind of a follow-up is, why you use English ale yeast in the brown porter but not in the robust porter and imperial stout?
Ah, interesting question.
Yeah.
So you could go with an English ale yeast in those, but... You know, Robust Porter and Russian Imperial Stout have really been taken over by the U.S. You know, it died out in England. You know, Russian Imperial Stout still was going, but, you know, and it's really been popularized in the U.S. And when it got popularized in the U.S., it was with, you know, a clean pub yeast, you know, Cal Ale, 1056, you know, yeasts along those lines. And that's how I kind of grew up loving those styles. And I think a lot of people expect them to be that way. So I go with those yeasts. You could go ahead with the English ale yeast on those, but I don't like it. And also, on bigger beers, I like those cleaner yeasts. Because they don't, you're going to get more fruitiness, you're going to get more alcohol. You don't need you're going to get more residual sweetness because they're bigger beers, like a Russian Imperial Stout. You don't need the English ale yeast to do that. Now, on the smaller beers, I actually like the English ale yeast because it leaves a little more residual sugar. It leaves, a little more fruitiness, you know, all that character in there. So
yeah, they're lighter beers looking for flavor, and the yeast add a lot of flavor to those beers.
Yep, yep. So I think that's kind of my tendency. Mm-hmm. Smaller beers go English, bigger beers go the cleaner pub, American pubbies.
Couple more questions. Can you substitute carafa for chocolate to stay away from getting too much of that bitter bite?
No, yes. All right, so it depends. I'll awesome. Use the White Labs answer. It
there
depends. The thing about carafa is when you say carafa, you got to be more specific. You're talking about carafa with the husk, or carafa special, which is huskless. Okay, if you go with the huskless, it doesn't have enough of those roasty flavors to make it taste like chocolate malt. If you go with the regular carafa, it has the husk and it tastes just like whatever chocolate malt you're targeting. So there's really no difference. So I wouldn't use the carafa special. because it's just not enough flavor there. If you want to control the amount of that acrid nature, then use a lower Lovibond highly kiln malt, a lower Lovibond chocolate, or you know, cut back on the amounts or both. So chocolate malt, you can get chocolate malt that's 300 Lovibond. You can get chocolate malt that's 500 Lovibond. It makes a big difference in the flavor. So you have to pay attention to that. Or, you know, substitute out half of, with pale chocolate, which is what I do a lot of times.
Does your percentages change at all between a 300L and a 500L chocolate?
Yeah, you'd have to mess with the, you know, with what you're trying to achieve, sure. But generally, if you're trying to just cut back on that character, I would just go to a lower Lovibond, keep the same amount.
Okay.
And, you know, that would be my first shot at it and see if that resolved the problem.
Okay.
Now they're asking about pale chocolate. Is that essentially a lower Lovibond?
Yeah, 200 Lovibond chocolate malt.
Okay. Would kettle caramelization give you a flavor similar to diacetyl, someone had asked?
Well, and I found this in doing Scottish ales. So when you're talking about kettle caramelization, that's where you know you run some high-gravity wort into your kettle, you know, half inch or an inch, and then you just like boil a snot out of it until it starts thickening up and caramelizing. And you do that to generate those flavors. The problem is, what I found in Scottish ales, is that everybody said, oh, diacetyl, 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 when actually it's more of a caramel toffee flavor. And, you know, toffee, I guess, relates to butter quite you know, nicely. But, you know, there's no diacetyl in it, but that's what people would say. So, yeah, that kettle caramelization can cause people to say that, at least with certain malt bills, I think.
Are you better off having an impression of diacetyl than actually having diacetyl?
I think it doesn't really matter either way. Either, you know, there's some people who just hate diacetyl. Any trace of it they think is a problem.
And last question from longtime listener Sean Haggerty. Jamil, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
I look at myself in the mirror every night.
That's it from the chat room.
It's a good way to end it, huh?
All right, cool. All right, so for this recipe, you know, starting gravity 1052, 27 IBUs, 24 SRM. You're going to use, as an extract brewer, 6.8 pounds or 3.08 kilograms of an English pale ale liquid malt extract, or as an all-grain brewer, use 9.5 pounds or 4.31 kilograms of British pale ale malt mashed at 152 degrees Fahrenheit or 67 degrees C. For your other grains, you need a pound or 0.45 kilograms of brown malt and the same amount of Crystal 40. Chocolate malt, you're going to use a 350 Lovibond chocolate malt, about 10 ounces, 284 grams. You might dial it down a little bit more, a little bit less, a little bit more, depending on you know what kind of chocolate malt you have. Again, this is 350 Lovibond, so this is kind of on the lower range of the color. You might go to a 300 Lovibond. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be another adjustment you could make, like we're talking. That's the dial. For hops, you're looking at 5% alpha acid Fuggles in pellets, a 60-minute addition of 1 1/4 ounce or 35 grams, and a 10-minute addition of 1/2 ounce or 14 grams. And your yeast is going to be White Labs WLP 013 London Ale or Y Yeast 1028 London Ale. If you're a dry yeast user, Dan Star Nottingham. That should make you a good brown porter. Very much like Sam Smith's Taddy Porter. And again, that brown malt is critical in that application.
Good show.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Bruce.
Bruce Strong,
nice
thanks
nice
for coming
here.
On.
Yeah.
Up next,
we're going to do the American light lager, the premium lager, the standard lager, light lager, all that. Hey, you know, don't tune out because there's going to be a lot of good information here on brewing lagers, and even if you don't want to do the American lights, and it's a tricky beer, so it's pretty cool. Cheers.
Jamil Show has been a production of the Brewing Network. Please send questions for Jamil to jamil@thebrewingnetwork.com. The Jamil Show airs live right here on the Brewing Network.